Hello, what is up, insiders? Welcome back. Whew! It has been a wild ride. I'm pretty psyched up for today. Let's just get right into it. Tarkan is joining us along with a guest, and why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest, Tark?
Yeah, what's up, everybody? I think wild ride is the best way to describe it, Chaz. It's been pretty crazy the past week and a half. We are joined by Brian Spellman, who some of you may not know Brian, some of you may. Brian is a pretty big L3 judge. He travels to a lot of events. He's part of the Exemplar program. He's also part of the kind of core judge group, which is, I would say, fairly elite group who kind of they get compensated really well to kind of go out. They're sort of an elite group of judges. So he's been in the judge game for a minute. Some of you may know him, some of you may not. But Brian also, kind of unbeknownst to him and accidentally, has become the PR and community manager person for Oathbreaker, which I know has become kind of a hot topic the past week. And so I figured we could chat with him a little bit at the end of the cast about Oathbreaker, and he can give us his perspective and kind of a bigger picture view of what's going on with that community and what he thinks. Most of us know what we think about these formats here, but Brian's got a pretty good view, and given that he's entrenched in what's going on with that scene right now, I thought it might be a good idea. But mostly, we're going to talk Modern Horizons, Chaz.
I'm so ready. Brian, it is awesome to have you join us as a guest.
I'm just going to say, I don't think I'm quite as awesome celebrity sounding as Tark seems to make me out there. But if you've been to Magic Fest, you've probably seen me on the floor in that little black shirt. I've done almost 70 Grand Prix at this point, I think. Hi. Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate the time that you're going to give us. We're always psyched for guests around here, so everyone's a celebrity. That being said, I am in full tap out mode, Tark. Brian, really? I don't know if you've been following along as much, especially some of the. It has been complete mass hysteria and bedlam out there.
Yeah, this set is pretty exciting.
But not, yeah. I will say, we've been fairly correct in our first original assessment after seeing like five cards, so I'm pretty stoked about
that. Yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and just put it out there. I'm clearly the fall guy. I was saying that this was going to be a POS and a turd and just wasn't going to do anything. I did not say that. What I said was that this was going to be EDH Horizons, not Modern Horizons. I said that from literally the time they spoiled the first two cards, when I said that was basically setting the tone for the set. Like, Sarah is clearly an EDH card. I don't see it as a modern card. And Cabal Therapist is cute, but it both those cards, as well as given the time frame of release, which is right around the usual casual supplemental time, right? When we have battle bonds and conspiracies. When I put those two factors together, I said, okay, yeah, this is probably going to be skewed casual, or a way for them to sneak in a lot of casual cards and wrap it around modern branding, because obviously the word modern just sells, right? And I think it's fairly apparent that that's what happened. I know everyone is sort of, there's all kinds of conjecture about what's going to be played in modern and whatnot. But as far as I can tell, as awesome as a set as this is, by the way, I want to stress, this set is epic. I mean, there's just crazy cards left and right. However, I don't see most of these having a serious impact on modern. I know it's yet to be seen, but I think if we realistically look at everything and assess them, I see a lot of sideboard cards. I see a lot of potential one-ofs. And I see a cycle of Horizon Canopy lands. You know, the canopy lands are obvious auto includes in modern, but outside of that, I don't see much that's going to become, you know, crazy new hard modern staples, or that's going to shake up the format.
Yeah,
personally, I'm just excited about Pillage in modern.
That is a very good card to have.
Chaz, what do you think?
So, this is where I'm at. I've been saying it probably the last couple days that this set is a Commander set with some modern cards in it rather than a modern set with some Commander cards in it. And I think that's pretty much true for the most part. I mean, don't get me wrong. We definitely have some very interesting cards to look at in terms of, you know, mythics, rares. It's good that some of these cards exist. I, you know, even said that when we casted, when was it? Last Sunday, when we first looked at some of the cards, not to get too much into it because it was Discord exclusive, but you know, it's good that some of these cards exist. Force of Negation, some other stuff. But if we have to sit down at this and look at this set as anything other than an overall kind of Commander theme, I think we're just fooling ourselves. You know, there's definitely some powerful stuff. Urza, we have Echo of Aeons, we have Renin 6, we have, you know, Seasoned Pyromancer, just to name a few of the mythics. I mean, then going down the line, there's certainly role players. I think some of the more impactful cards are honestly, you know, uncommon and common even. Unearth, yep. Pillage, as, you know, Brian just talked about.
Yep.
And it's great that those cards kind of sneaked in there, exactly like you said, Tark. But I am now firmly, my kind of final take on Modern Horizons, and we're mostly the way there. I believe we have all the rares and all the mythics. So, you know, whatever, you know, comes out on out of this is gravy in terms of commons and uncommons. But I think as impactful as this has been, or as impactful as, sorry, War of the Spark has been for every single format, I believe Modern Horizons is, to use your word, Tark, epic for anything casual related. I mean,
I think you should just start calling it Elder Dragon Horizons.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, EDH Horizons, Elder Dragon Horizons, whatever the terminology you want to use, I'm fully on board with that because we may not, I mean, it has just been an absolute, like, craziness. I've never seen a set like this where almost every single card that was revealed has affected either one or many other cards in some way. I've really never seen something quite like this. And this is just another, like, this is a print, normal printed to demand, like, Battle Bond set. I mean, this is a master set.
The thing is the reaction that people were hoping to get from cards that could affect Modern, I am getting, and they should be getting, for how these cards will affect Kitchen Table Magic. Because, I mean, you go look at any past supplemental that was casual focus, and nothing comes remotely close to the impact that this set's going to have. I mean, it's like damn near every rare and mythic has some kind of like meaningful impact in casual play. So many of the uncommons and commons have a lot of impact. I mean, it's just like left and right, there's crazy cards for casual. So my response to this set is exactly like yours. I am so ecstatic and excited about this set for casual. I mean, it's just huge. You know, and the other point to take about Modern is, I don't know what people were expecting was going to happen. When Wizards publicly announces that they're like, listen, so you know, this is print to demand, 36 packs, right? Like, what were people expecting? Were they going to stock it full of Modern staples that were going to throw off the format and be $400 boxes? Like, that wasn't going to happen when they're like saying this is a print to demand set, 36 packs. You know, if they had said this was a limited product, 24 packs, I would have been like, oh man, we might be ready for some crazy Modern stuff. But they're not going to blast a set that's just going to completely blow up the format and have it be print to demand, right? Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think this set was executed perfectly. I think there's some cards here and there that are going to see Modern play. I think there's one ofs, there's great sideboard cards. I think there are decks that are going to help tier two decks, like I think Zombies and Dredgen isn't a tier two deck, but that got a few more tools. Like, I think there is going to be certainly some Modern play, but the impact from this set is going to be in the kitchen table. I think there's going to be all kinds of crazy cool things that are going to happen with that. And I think it's a good thing, man. I think they did a perfect job with this set. I'm super excited about it. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Brian, did you want to chime in?
I mean, I pretty much agree with everything that was just said. Obviously, due to recent developments, I've actually been looking at this set with some more excitement for things that we might be able to use for the Oathbreaker slot. Of course, I'm sure we'll get to talking about the cool new Planeswalkers in a bit, and also the whole like signature spell idea. But then some other outside of that, I actually like the some of the changelings that are can be used in, you know, sure. some of the formats. Like Merfolk's got a fun, I guess Merfolk and humans have a fun new one, and that I just lost his name, the blue white changeling
guy, the Mariner.
Yeah. So I'm excited about just how things are going to change up. And I think that's something that, yes, will have effect on kitchen table, but some of these will sneak into some more, decks that we actually see out there in the meta, which I'm excited about looking at.
Yeah. You know, and it's to answer a question in chat, to be critical, I do think that the branding, you know, it could be a point of contention, but I mean, short of that, I mean, what's really there to complain about this set, right? Like, it may not serve its overall purpose of, like, being Modern Horizons in terms of what everyone may have expected that this set is going to throw Modern, like, upside down. I've never really had that expectation. But I will say this, I'm saying it again, I have not seen another set like this that will... Not only has moved the needle on so many cards already, but I think that we're going to see plenty of residual increases from here on out. You know, like, you know, when you get like you hurt yourself and you're so numb that you can't even feel anything anymore. Like they, you know, maybe you get a root canal or something, you just can't feel anything. Yeah. That's this set. Like, there's been so much action that I feel people are inundated by how much, like, so many things can change in terms of the commander scene, the casual scene, that it may take some time for folks to even start looking at, whoa, I mean, like, all these, you know, all these cards get, you know, better with Unbound Flourishing, or, oh, like, there's so much to do with, you know, Morophon, like, maybe we're just scraping the surface with Morophon. Oh, maybe some other cards may increase from some other card, and so on and so forth. I think we got like just the bare minimum of what, like, that just jumps to the front of everybody's mind as to what will increase with this set. And I think we'll start seeing some residual increases after this. That's my take.
I think that that we'll be able to look back on this and say that this set was a generous gift that was full of shenanigans.
It really was. I mean, yeah. So many different throwbacks. I got it. I think there was a pun in there somewhere.
There were two. There were two puns in there.
There were two. I know there's shenanigans as a card.
Generous gift is also a card.
Okay, got it. well done. But yeah, I mean, you know, and to a lesser extent, you can even be excited for Modern in the sense that, like I said before, it's good that some of these cards exist. It's good that some of these cards, like Pillage, get you know, sneak in here. I am just blown away by this. This might have to be this is I think the best supplemental product. I guess we can call it that, right? Like it's like a battle bond. I think we put battle bond as a supplemental product. This is probably the best supplemental product I've ever seen.
I would agree with that. In let's see, I'm trying to think of other stuff that they've done, but.
I mean, if you want to maybe put Modern Masters in there somehow, or maybe the Commander set some, you know, I think this is a strong, strong number one.
I like Modern Masters. I mean, not to go off topic, but yeah, I mean, I would say the original Modern Masters is up there. But the fact that this isn't a reprint set, it makes it more interesting.
I think that's really why everyone's so excited about this.
Right.
I think that's really the crux.
I'm very excited just to start drafting this set. Like some of the funnest draft sets they've made. The Modern Masters 2017 was fantastic for drafting. And I don't know how this one's going to play out if you do a draft, just because, you know, the cards that care about snowlands are going to be fantastic and have some effects in other formats. And it's going to be interesting to see how they work in the draft as far as how easy it's going to be to get the snowlands you need to make them actually applicable. So I view most of my Magic experience from the fun point of view is in the, at least when I started the competitive stuff, is in limited, so sealed and draft. And yep. I'm very excited to crack these packs as a draft.
You're not the first to say that too. We've seen a number of folks say that they can't wait to jump into the set and draft it as well.
Yeah, so the limited format just looks like it's going to be bananas.
I really don't know what more there is to say about this set. I think it It was good that I was kind of timid about it. I do think that my initial take on it is overall correct in saying that I kind of was leaning towards what you were saying, Tart, that this will likely be a casual set that has some implications in it. But I don't think, you know, going into the future that we, you know, if the the naming convention is correct and assuming that they're going to continue on with Modern Masters somewhere in the future. Modern Horizons. This kind of felt like a dip the toe in kind of, you know, thing and see like where, you know, how many ripples they make. I do think they might get a little bit more, you know, step the whole foot in next time and maybe push the boundaries as to what can affect Modern the next go around. I think they wanted to play it safe here, have a lot of stuff that people can get excited for the kitchen table Commander crowd, you know, have some stuff that should exist for Modern. And whether it has a lot of impact or not, negligent impact can be debated, but I do think going forward that they will change their design philosophy on this.
Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned
at least
that.
Somewhat.
I think that what I found really interesting about this, and it's actually different from something that I thought originally. Typically with these new ideas, they kind of come out the gates blasting. Like look at Modern Masters and look at some of this other stuff. They usually come out swinging really hard and they're like, they decide to scale it back and then they dilute the product. This time, I agree with you. Considering they said it was focused on Modern, they seem to kind of tiptoe in the Modern space with it a little bit more than everybody thought. I think that was partially intentional, but I do think that overall you get a sense of them tiptoeing a little bit to be safe. And I think that was smart for them because this is the first time they've done, like, there's no precedent set for this kind of product. And I think along with what, this was a great comment here in the chat by Time Being, he said, you know, we have to consider that future sets, like cards could end up being broken out of from Modern Horizons as they print new sets, you know, when people start finding new combinations for Modern. And I think that that might have gotten into consideration when they were designing cards and reprinting cards or saying, okay, let's make sure that we don't go too much over bounds, because if we do, who knows what could happen in the future. And we end up getting, you know, we end up warping Modern unintentionally with sets that haven't even been designed yet or released. So it was interesting to see them sort of tiptoe with this. I think that what I'm curious about, and Brian and I were talking about this before the cast, mm-hmm. is the big question mark really is going to be supply on this, right? It's obvious that there's a lot of hype around this, and it's clear to me, given I've seen a major distributor that's sold out of pre-orders. There's just a lot of flurry and excitement about this. I think wave one of this set will sell out, right? Mm-hmm. But we've never seen a product like this release, and they have publicly announced that it is print to demand. Now, we know that they've made similar comments about things like Battle Bond and Conspiracy, and what ends up happening is there ends up being less available than normal. However, given the excitement around this set, I think that they projected that there's going to be a lot of hype.
That's a good point.
I believe my hypothesis is that there's actually more of this that's going to be printed than anticipated. And I think what's going to happen is, because the price point is higher, wave one is going to sell out. Wave two, because Magic players have no attention span, people are going to forget about it. And in tandem with a higher price point, less is going to be bought, which is going to result in more of it sitting around. And then since there's more of it sitting around, as people discover things with new cards and new interactions, the value of the cards are going to go up, and slowly that supply is going to be dripped into the market as merchants crack boxes to match the demand for the singles. Because I get the big argument everyone's making is like, well, it's so expensive, these mythics aren't going to exist, there's not going to be any supply. Well, right. As long as there's plenty of boxes that exist in the marketplace, there is going to be supply, right? Like, I don't expect this set to break the EV rule, whereby if the value of the cards is higher than the market value of the set, you know, it's suddenly, you know, you're just going to, the boxes are going to have to go up. No, I think there's going to be enough supply that the boxes will get cracked to bring the values at a manageable point and keep the box values at a certain place. That's what I think. Now, if I'm wrong about the supply, and if there's not that much, and if wave two, they don't actually print that much of it, then yeah, like we could be in a scenario where, you know, because these cards are incredible. And then all of a sudden in a year, the boxes shoot up $100. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think that due to the cost of the boxes, there's going to be a lot of it lying around, and it will slowly over time get cracked. I think there will be enough supply for quite a bit of time. That's the big question mark with this, right? Because obviously the price point is a bit cost prohibitive. It's not like people can just throw paychecks at this every week and just keep buying it like they could a standard set, right? And stores, you know, there's cash flow and whatnot that stores have to maintain. But I think that there's going to be enough made and printed that it's going to be around. So that's my general take.
Yeah, to play a slight devil's advocate here, based on some recent experience that we've had with some interesting online sales through eBay of a supplemental product, I don't know if we could say that the estimation of demand is actually going to be correct, especially in the first run. Maybe the first two could possibly make argument they might not print as much as is going to be popular. It obviously can't be like the whole thing that happened with Mythic Edition, because it's not a set limited amount. But I'm not convinced that there's going to be way too much out there at first, or that the second printing is going to be enough to cover the demand.
Yeah, I'm in the mindset that there will likely be a shortage in the beginning. There's going to be a glut of demand and not as much to kind of be able to supply all of it. So I'm kind of in the same mindset as Brian.
But do you think, in the beginning, yes, but I'm saying long term, do you anticipate for there to be not enough boxes to go around within a year?
So the only data point that I think that we have, now I don't know if it's true for supplemental products like for a set like this, but I believe someone posted that they're still printing Commander 2018 right up until Commander 2019. So if they continue to print it in that manner, then no. In a year's time, I do think there's going to end up being plenty of supply out there.
That's my position. And listen, I get the argument. Yeah, go ahead.
This was actually a really good quote that I think should be considered when we're talking about this. And this was from Lockheed. Players draft those very limited-oriented sets a couple of times and lose interest due to the cards in Conspiracy/Battle Bond not being playable in most formats. Less interest, stores order less product, less demand, less printed. That's the entirely opposite of this set.
Correct.
So I do think it will take longer for the supply to catch up to the demand, because it's the exact opposite. A lot of these cards can be played, mostly all of the cards can be played in most formats, and I don't think there is going to be a loss of interest.
And my argument is that they will just continue to fire up the printers to try and match that demand. And I think what's going to end up happening is, I think that there will be ultimately, I agree, probably in the beginning, it's just going to be crazy. But I think over time, there is going to be enough. And listen, I'm very clear on how it works. Like, we've seen this happen, right? Like, oh crap, Battle Bond is suddenly out of print and it's suddenly gone because everybody suddenly wants it. Like, I get it, right? And that could certainly happen. I just think that, given the unique nature of this product, and they're not dumb, they know, you know, they're monitoring the hype, they know how much demand there is, they're talking to distributors. I think that long term, there's going to end up being plenty of this around. I could be wrong about that, but my hunch.
No, I don't think you're wrong, because this is not, and it's nice to draw the parallel, but this is not Battle Bond or Modern Masters or anything like that. They still do, regardless if it's, you know, EDH Horizons or whatever, they still do have to make sure that there's more of this product than any of those other previous products.
Correct.
Because of the first time modern printing specifically.
Your Commander 2018 comparison, I think, is very apt. And I think that's a really, really, really good point. They just keep printing it, right? Despite how crappy.
They said they're printing it like right now. They said they keep printing it now.
So if they're going to keep printing that and it's just doing basic business, why would they stop printing this, which is going to just constantly be blowing out the water? Now the thing to keep in mind, and the caveat to all of this, is that yes, it's more expensive, and that weighs into the equation, right? Because less people are going to end up being able to buy it as opposed to Commander 2018. So I get it. It's a very, very weird thing that's going on here, and it's a big question mark. I'm making what I think is you know, I'm proposing what I believe is going to happen, but it's certainly possible that they're like, well, you know, people just stop buying it, so we're just going to stop printing it. Mm-hmm. But enough people buy it soon enough that there ends up being not enough. Like, I get it, right? I don't think that's going to happen since this is such a new type of product. I just feel like they're going to make enough available in the long term.
The other thing to consider is that this is definitely going to be people buying this, or also people who are some of the same overlap of people that are going to be buying the next standard set that comes out.
Yep.
And they will have to make the decision of, what am I buying? What am I spending my paycheck on? And so, you know, there should, in theory, be less of this printed and available around the time they expect people to want to buy into the next set. And then would they fire up the printing presses again after that to make more happen? I don't know. But it is definitely going to be some overlap that I don't think that same overlap existed with, say, the Commander product, because that's a one-time you buy it. You probably don't need it again because you have the deck.
Right.
This, you know, if you have the funds and you enjoy drafting, you're just going to keep buying as much as you can as long as it's available.
I do think they will make it available. I think we pegged kind of how this will play out between the three of us here, because I you brought up a really good point, Brian, in the fact that this was kind of wedged between two sets. It's not the same as like a Commander product. You're absolutely right in the fact that you buy it once and it's done. This was wedged between War of the Spark, which was already really successful, plus the Japanese stuff and how, you know, what, you know, folks are buying boxes of that still. Then we have Core 2020. I would have to think Core 2020 may not stack up to these two. So it may just, you know, folks may just, you know, players may just buy into Core 2020 and then forget about that and continue playing this all summer. You know, I would like to believe that continues happening. And then throughout the year, I feel like they're going to make sure outlets are stocked with Modern Horizons.
Yeah.
But, you know, that all still all being said, there's just no way, just like any other sets, that every single Mythic could be $30. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
No. And I would definitely say that I still hold the position that I would not be investing in these boxes. I think that for the risk, you
unless
know,
you're local,
the risk that they, the risk that they sit at $220 for longer than anticipated, it weighs heavier than the potential reward. I just don't see these being $400 boxes in a year. I don't see them being at, unless the market price is close to $300. I don't even know if they're going to hit $300 in a year. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to sit around retail for longer than people expect. So I would not necessarily be going in on sealed boxes.
However, I think if it pushes 250, I would be just happy with that.
That said, the singles, man, when we get past pre-order ridiculousness and when we start seeing some lows, I would go in on these cards because these are first prints, right? Like
only foils.
These are first print there's no way they're going to just reprint everything in this set in the next one. Now, keep in mind that if there's a Modern Horizons 2, there's a good chance that some of these are going to just get reprinted in Modern Horizons 2. But there's no way everything is. And the fact that these are first printings, like, I mean, honestly, those Canopy lands, there could be a world where because of the lands, those lands end up being $35, $40 because they're first prints, right? We have no idea what their reprint policy is going to be on this, but I would just say that the singles in this set are going to be very, very attractive to buy into, because given that it's going to be hard to open a lot of this set quickly, there is going to be less available on the market at any given time, right? Like, it's not like a standard set where it can just be crack, 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 crack. Like, I agree with everyone that due to the price point of this set, less singles are going to be available rapidly. I do agree with that. I just think that it's going to be like they will slowly be introduced over time into the market because there will be enough supply to provide that. But I do agree that it's not going to be like standard where it's just like, oh, we just crack infinite boxes at one time and now we just have massive amounts of supplies of single, right? I get that. So I do think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity in the singles.
Realistically, and you can chime in on this too, Brian, unless you had thoughts about what we just talked about.
I was trying to decide in the back of my mind if I thought that I 100% agree with that, or if I think that buying them and so what I like to do is buy things, keep them so that my play group can draft them later down the road in a few years. which has worked really well. Like, we just had a draft of actually all three of the original Modern Masters, and then 2015 and 2017. So those are super fun. So this for that potential for me is why I would like to take a couple boxes and keep them. I don't think the price is going to skyrocket of them within the next, you know, few months or so. But I would not be surprised if in a couple years they did push, like, say, $350. But it's not, you know, as Tark was saying, you could definitely, by specking on individual cards, get much better of a return than the sealed boxes are going to give you.
Yeah. Okay, so that kind of answers my question as to, because I was going to ask, where do you see these prices on boxes, you know, midterm / long term?
I think
Ryan's in like the 300.
Yeah, that's where that's where I see. I think, okay. I don't think, okay, it all depends on, I would say that I do not foresee more than a 10% increase in market price, wherever market price lands, within 12 months. I don't see more than that. I think that like 30 plus percent returns is not going to happen for a minimum of 24 months plus.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. This sealed product is just really not my forte. Like, as it stands right now, unless you're not, you know, unless you're selling locally, you're still at a loss, right? Like, I don't even think you can sell these for anything. You like break even.
You make $5-$10 on these boxes. Are you talking about like right now?
Yeah, I mean,
Just to clarify, Chaz, hang on. You're saying if you're a player consumer and you're just buying boxes, there's no money to be made right now.
Right.
No,
there's not.
No.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, unless, I mean, you need them to hit like 250, 300 to not be able to move these for something. Unless you're
when you factor in fees and shipping and all that, I think you need at least $300.
Yeah, right. Like, unless you're making what, $20 a box, if that. I mean, I guess that's normal, right? If they hit 250, I think you're fine.
No, because they're 220 right now.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. If they hit 250, I think they're fine. You're fine.
They're 220 to buy right now. You will not make money.
They're 220 to buy right now. No, if you got in at 180.
Like, yeah. Yes.
Oh, I wouldn't even buy in now, even if they hit 300.
Correct. If you're saying way back in like day one when you could find them on TCG.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't even buy in now. Definitely not. Yeah. No, I wouldn't buy in now anymore. Yeah, unless you got in under 200, I wouldn't even buy boxes at this point.
Right.
All right, so that clears up that. So before we move on, because we do want to allocate some time to our other segment, top five cards that you're looking at right now for this set. We'll start with Utark.
Okay, so I think Echo of Eons. I know it's obvious, but I just think that's going to the big. I think that's going to edge out Urza as far as what becomes a winner in the set. That card is going to see so much play all over kitchen tables that it's awesome. I think that.
So is that mostly just for casual appeal, or?
Yeah, I don't.
Okay.
I don't know if that's going to make it into Modern. Maybe, but I just think that that's just a blowout mythic that's going to have a lot of demand. That's driven mostly by casual, but I didn't like it, but now I really like that little 1/1 vampire that buffs all your vampires when a creature dies. I think that card seems innocuous, and I think it's actually going to end up being really good. And who knows, could become something in a modern tribal vampire. I don't think that's likely, but I think that card is going to be relatively cheap and then end up seeing a lot more demand and end up being worth a lot more. That's two. Number three would be Unearth. I think Unearth is absolutely going to see modern play. I'd love to see that back in the format. Number four would be, hang on, I'm just refreshing myself really quick. I do like that new blue-white Changeling. I think I think that could have implications in Merfolk. I don't know about humans, probably not, but maybe. And then that's 1, 2, 3, 4. And then my last one, I another one that I at first I didn't like it, and then all of a sudden Actually, this happened in chat where I was like, wow, is Dead of Winter, which is the toxic deluge for snow.
Yeah, I
think that's actually after I realized, like, wait, we can just jam Snowlands in your deck. Boom, that's great. By the way, I want to comment. I think the most played cards that are going to come out of all of this are going to be the snow basics. I think snow basics are going to be jammed all over the place. Well,
they were already legal.
Yeah, I know, but now I think they're going to be played more.
Because there's some cards in the set that, like, say, why would you ever play basics when you could play snow and do,
yes,
you know,
that's true.
Nights, for example.
Right. Yeah,
true.
That's
all right.
That's
recap: Echo of Eons. I don't think we have an English translation on this card yet, so it's up as Markov Manors.
Yep.
On Earth, Unsettled Mariner, Dead of Winter. Brian.
Yep.
I think this is done well. Bear Force 1 is going to be a deck that's out there now based on things that have been previewed in Modern Horizons.
Bear Force 1, love it.
Obviously, the new legendary Bear Lord is super fantastic. Iula, Queen of whatever it was.
Queen Among Bears.
Thank you, yeah. Tatark just scrolled my window past as I was trying to read it. I think so. To me, that's, and then, of course, the new Planeswalker, Random 6. Like, just work, I mean, great together. So I'm just going to turn all my lands into fantastic bears and have a blast. So I think those are just fun to look at for, I mean, commander purposes. I think that's everywhere. And also for Oathbreaker, that's going to be super fun. I'm a big sucker for really fantastic flavor text. So this isn't really a value pick, but a Generous Gift has some super fun flavor text. Since it's a nice picture of an elephant that has crushed a gift, and it says that best presents are impossible to re-gift. So
awesome.
That might be my favorite card out of the set just because of that. Just because of the name of this one and what I think it's going to be, like, in any commander deck that plays red is probably going to have to run a copy of Shenanigans, just recursive artifact destruction. So it's just a common card, but I think it's going to be a fun one. And of course, my group has all tried to go and pick up their foils of that one just to run in their deck. So what was that? How many have I talked about so far? Four?
I think. So, you have Iula, Renin 6. I think I missed one. Generous Gift.
Shenanigans.
Oh, Shenanigans. There we go.
And then I think the one that's going to see the actual, I mean, this one I think is going to see some real play is On Thin Ice.
Nice. Okay. Excellent. Iula, Renin 6, Generous Gift, Shenanigans. On. So mine, it's actually kind of funny because there's a couple that are on both of your lists. So I also like Renin 6. Not just because it's a green card, but this card's ridiculous. I mean, it's like almost another Crucible of Worlds in EDH. I don't know how we're not discussing that more. And I pretty much jam, like, lands and Crucible Worlds in almost any deck. So if it feels, at least for the commander end, if your deck can play red and green, you want to play Renin 6. Short of that, it may have some modern implications. Definitely interesting. I don't know if it's like a $30+ Planeswalker, but I do think it will have a lot of applications coming out of this. I do think so. Going from there, I like Unearth a lot. Feels like probably the best common we'll get out of the set might be like one of the most impactful cards we get out of the set for Modern.
Yeah.
I like Unsettled Mariner a lot.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm just writing. Unsettled Mariner. I mean, what's more to say? The card is super versatile, can fit into pretty much any archetype.
Yep.
And the effect is so powerful. I mean, just it says permanence, so it protects itself, protects anything else, protects you.
Yep.
It's ridiculous, quite frankly. Could get played off Uncharted Territory, Cavern of Souls, can fit into a plethora of different archetypes. It's just such a. It was spoiled. It was previewed like nearly last. And I think people really are going to gloss over. The card is ridiculous. So we have that boom. I think the Augur, the zombie, is really strong. I mean, if Sam Black and all these folks are pushing for zombies, I think that that card has to have some sort of impact for anyone to even be remotely interested in mono black zombies in modern.
Yeah, that's so that card. That card's like really
Undead
good.
Augur.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I think my final card that I like is.
So I'll try to recap real quick. I said I can tell by comments that people have made on social media about this format whether they've actually played the format or not. And because if you just look at it from a high level commander variant that allows an extra card in the command zone, it could be like, oh, wow, I'm just going to break this and it won't be fun. But when you actually talk to people who have played it, they say it's just super fantastic. And what I think a lot of people don't know is that the format's actually been around and playtested since about 2017. So like 2 years that it's been being played. And there's a ban list that was created. And it was a format created for casual players and for multiplayer. So the ban list is not targeted towards single player. It's multiplayer ban list. And it's just made to make sure people are, you know, having fun. And that's exactly what the format does, is let you have a lot of fun. I'm going to do a quick shout out here to Weird Cards, which is the only Magic the Gathering.
This is going to be a nightmare, but it's okay.
All right. So you'll have fun editing. So quick shout out to Weird Cards. Every time we go through this, it gets a little bit shorter, though, so you'll be fine. So quick shout out to Weird Cards, who they actually created this format. So really quick, Weird Cards is the only Magic the Gathering charitable club in existence, and they take all of your unused cards that have been hiding in your closets, your extra bulk and stuff, and put it to good use, actually teaching kids magic. This is something that teachers are adding to curriculums. It's also happening in like boys and girls clubs, all that sort of stuff. And it's having some pretty cool effects for the kids. And the fact that teachers are like, oh, we want to teach this in class now, I think speaks volumes. They started a 501c nonprofit called Magic Kids, which is basically, Weird Cards was created. It got super popular. They had to actually go through this whole, you know, let's make some charity, actual real work happen. So much money goes through there for helping kids. It's fantastic. So what happened was during their lunch break back in 2017-ish, they all played Commander during lunch break, and they weren't able to finish games in time. So they tried to make it faster and kept coming with house rules, and eventually Oathbreaker evolved. Which also sticks to the lore behind the idea that we should be planeswalkers battling, and that's what magic is supposed to be, as far as like each player is a planeswalker. And so it really made that theme happen in the games and created some super fun interactive games. If you actually want to read some of the fun behind how it started, the lore behind it, and why, if you go to oathbreakermtg.org, and click on articles, there's an article called An Interview with an Oathmaker, which I think is a really fun read. And then just today we're publishing the interview with the CEO of Weird Cards, which is Jason Eggington. Another fun interview. So lots of fun stuff happening there. And all of this happened kind of by accident. Like, I saw this format and I saw the rules on the website, and I'm like, I wonder how these would look as actual comp rules. So I ported them so that they could, if the format really took off, the rules committee of Wizards of the Coast could just take this and hopefully plop it right in there in section 906 and have the rules for Oathbreaker. And then from there it kind of expanded, and now I guess I'm inadvertently running the community home of Oathbreaker on the web now, and got a lot of support from Weird Cards for just doing that, since their focus is of course on helping kids. And as this format gets bigger, the one thing we want to do is just help everybody remember to, hey, you know, use this, you're having fun, donate some money to Weird Cards. Or sorry, technically donate money to Magic Kids. But a lot of people keep popping up with, why is this something that's not just another Commander variant? It's not just the next big, you know, fad that happens and goes away. And I think one thing to keep in mind is it's actually been playtested by this group for 2 years, and then it expanded to their other social groups and their local play groups, and a lot of, you know, LGSs out there played it, and it just hit this critical mass where people kept finding out about it, trying it out, and then it started kind of exploding. Over the past, I think I put the website up a week and a half ago, and it's gotten over 20,000 individual unique views which I think is pretty decent for just a week and a half. No, not the numbers that would show it's a super sustainable format yet, but I think it's getting there. And the fact that it's been not just a new fad that just happened and is now trying to evolve as it happens, but has already was relatively well developed as far as some of the meta and formats and ban lists, gave it a good starting point so that people can just start enjoying it. We just posted an article called Build Your Own Battle Box, which is 5 starter decks, all under $20 that can be built. And I've now gotten feedback from some LGSs that are saying that they're building those to leave in their store so that people can pick them up, play with their play group, and find out what the format is. And we kind of have a little community initiative that's trying to put a bunch of budget decks out there, all of which are ranging from like, you know, $20 to $50, to make it easy to get in with a fun, you know, playable, strong deck that's not going to break the bank. And I think that is also really helping to start it. And a lot of YouTubers have started talking about their Oathbreaker decks and publishing their games. So I think it's got a lot of momentum, and I'm excited to see it actually go places. I personally don't think it's going to be a fad that just goes away. And then some other things I've been told from some Magic celebrities out there about how much they're getting into it and liking it also give me some encouragement. So I think that's, yes, it could be something that goes away, but I don't think it's going to. I think it's here to stay.
We'll go ahead and there was a comment from Dr. Hayes. Where's the link for the Build Your Own Battle Box? I'll go ahead and link that in here in just a moment when Brian shoots it over. Look, to play devil's advocate, we've seen these formats come and go. No one is on this cast telling you to go buy into Oath, you know, Oathbreaker. I'm sure Brian would say that you're probably not encouraging people just to go out and start buying cards left and right, trying to spike prices and all of that. But at the same time, even with the formats that have come and gone, there was opportunity, and there could be opportunity. Well, I would say there will likely be opportunity if this format continues to gain popularity for however long it does, that there will likely be some opportunity there to, get cards cheaper, get in them before they kind of see hikes, etc. So
yeah, here's the kind of the philosophy. So Weird Cards has some tenets that basically they founded on of be social, be inclusive, be generous, like kind of care about your community. And that came into the whole idea of the format too. Like it's really a social care about your community format. And so because of that, I'm not really one to encourage people to try to spike the prices, because if you spike the prices, it's going to make it harder for people to get into the format. But I think that as it gets popular and builds up, that we are going to see some cards that do kind of take off in price just because they're going to be in every deck. For example, I just ordered like 10 copies of Forge of Heroes because I need one in every single one of my Oathbreaker decks that I'm building. And so I just want them for practical purposes. But I think that in the longer run, cards like that would actually probably see a increase in price just because of the format.
Brian, do you have a kind of like low risk or low cost buy-in for someone who just want to say, why not let me take a risk on speculating in this that maybe is obscure, that's not already, seeing a ton of play somewhere else, and it could end up being.
I'm gonna jump in here because I had this conversation with insiders about this format. And this is kind of where I came at it. I'd much rather just donate to the charity.
Yeah.
If you can link where they can donate, I'd much rather just donate to the charity.
Yeah, I definitely like that.
This is the only difference with Oathbreaker that I really do like is that, again, we have seen these, come and go, these formats, but this is run by a charity, right? I mean, that's really awesome. It's the only Magic the Gathering charity, like you said, Brian. It's one thing if Haruya or whomever is trying to create this format for Frontier, and if you want to say they're trying to create this format to sell some Jace Friends prodigies, whatever. If you want to buy in on that, fine. I don't feel good buying into a format that was created by a charity for kids and trying to make money off of it. Like, I just want that plainly known. I am not going to be participating in it. And, you know, not that, like, obviously it's everyone else's own money. You can spend it the way you want. I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but I would personally feel not great about doing that. If by, you know, you maybe want to split the difference in if you want to invest, quote unquote, into this format, you know, kick back to the charity. You know, I would feel so weird, like, you know, profiting off of this and not giving anything back.
Yeah, I was going to say that in the event that you decide to do whatever you want, you know, if you do make something, you know, give it back to the charity. I mean, I think that's that to me, I agree with you, Chaz. To me, that is what makes this whole deal different. When I first heard about Oathbreaker, I was like, oh, someone just created a new format. Whoop-de-doo. But now after chatting with Brian about it and after hearing what the, at least the, you know, the motivations are behind getting this going, that has a uniqueness to it, I think. And regardless of whether the format blows up in popularity or not, I think it's kind of cool that the whole thing started off via, you know, interest in charity and kind of like that's giving right. back to the community. And I know, I think that's really cool. And I think that if for some reason you do decide to do whatever you will through your cash and you buy cards, you think Oathbreaker is going to go up and then they do whatever, I think you should totally donate to the charity. Absolutely.
I think the biggest benefit that's happening from kind of the explosion and all the talk about it is that it's getting even more notice to Weird Kids. Sorry, Weird Cards and Magic Kids. I keep putting those together in my head.
Kids.
A huge explosion happened. Like, you know, the Tellurian Academy did a bit about how it's his new favorite format. And
yeah. I mean, everything's his new favorite format, but that's fine.
But as soon as it happened like that, it sent so much traffic. And there actually of interest to this channel might be there was an article. I think Tark already actually linked it somewhere in QS before, but there was an article on the site about what the like MTG speculators don't really understand about Oathbreaker.
Yeah.
So I just sent him the list. I linked that too.
I linked that. I think it was last week. I posted that.
But that's another kind of fun read that I think gives some more insight to that whole mindset behind it. And honestly, I think I really like the idea of people exactly what you said. Like if you like this and you want to do something good, take your money and just, you know, donate it to a good cause. That's fantastic. I do think that there will be some price changes that happen down the road as this gets bigger, because that's what happens when markets and supply and demand. But I don't want to encourage anybody to try to, as you said, don't really speculate on this, because that's, you know, one of the big points is keeping the entry into it low enough that anybody can do it and then start having fun with it. And it gives so much use to those cards that are just your bulk cards you've already had that you aren't really needing to use anywhere. And you can now actually play and have fun with those too, which is great. I mean, you can build a good deck for under $20 and have like that build a box article. You can basically, you know, build five decks for under $20 each and have those ready to go just, you know, in your let's play a fun game, you guys, and sit down with four of your friends and you and have fun.
Excellent. Yeah, look, I kind of had that take on it, and it didn't feel right to me. And you know, in my profession, and I've taught classes with kids, and I've, you know, and I teach, and it didn't feel right to me, like at all, to look at this as just like an investment vehicle without any kind of regard back, you know, going back to the charity at all. And I made that very known. I do appreciate even before this, but you know, educating us on this, Brian, but even before that, there was a couple insiders that, you know, mentioned the charity, and I wasn't fully aware of all the details. So I do appreciate, you know, pushing back on that. Some of the insiders that I had that conversation with, and, you know, kind of letting me know all of the details, because I did not know that was the case. You know, like I said, you know, Frontier, Tiny Leaders, whatever, you know, if it was just made by someone, whoever, and they're trying to sell some cards, and it's, you know, all in, and I don't really care. Like, if you want to buy cards and the cards increase, you know, they're no names. You know, Haruya wants to sell some Jace from Prodigy. That was like the running joke. Fine, whatever. You know, all's game. But this, like, it just felt like so, like, I don't know. It's not my thing to do. I will be donating to the charity here soon. I think I'd rather just do that than to try to get into any kind of speculation on this. That's where I'm coming from. So, yeah, I would urge folks to do the same if they're so inclined. If folks are looking to, you know, buy into it in the sense that to make it cheaper for yourself, you know, buy a card or buy two, you know, keep one, sell one. You know, maybe, you know, I would strongly consider kicking back to the charity on some percentage of whatever you make. I think that would make it feel a lot better for me.
I agree.
The interview that just went live today was with Jason. One thing that I discovered when I was doing that interview with him was, well, Magic Kids has this goal of pretty much like teach everyone in the world magic is kind of their ambitious goal.
Yeah.
Because of all the benefits they have that they've seen of how that actually is, I mean, it gives you skills of reasoning and math and
gives
you not in front of the computer screen, but out in front of people and all that kind of
excellent
stuff.
I'd rather.
But he also was talking about how when they teach kids, like the curriculum they developed, starter decks are apparently the worst thing to use. They have a fun philosophy of they sit down with kids at like boys and girls clubs with a pile of magic cards and just have them start sorting them by color. And discovering like, okay, so what's similar about these? Like all these green cards, what do you find out about them, et cetera, et cetera. Get the personality of the cards. And then like, which one do you like best? Let's build a deck around that. They build a small deck out of just the, you know, everybody else's bulk and then start playing and have fun that way. And that's how it kind of grows into an actual, something that people get into. And if you are interested, I think one of the things that Magic players are the worst at is actually teaching people to play Magic. So if you're interested in learning how to actually teach magic better, there's some good resources on the Magic Kids side about that too.
Yeah, it's excellent. I mean, I've always loved, I mean, hell, like coming from someone in middle school and high school who would stay after school all the time playing magic, you know, it's always so funny because they would always try to like clear us out of there, you know, and they would like, you know, tell parents, I don't even remember how, like how old I was and how old are kids these days? I don't even know. But anyway, they would, you know, phone home to the parents and everything. And I always just remember, like, at least my mother saying, well, I'd rather him be playing that than, you know, behind the school doing God knows what, you know? So, I mean, it was always been for me, you know, a kind of like a safe haven. And it definitely teaches skills. So I'm really glad in, you know, what y'all are doing. And it's really fantastic.
Cool.
Yep. Excellent. Thanks so much. I think we're going to try to cut it there. I know you all are on a, you know, you have a schedule. Discord being crazy aside, that was an excellent cast. Brian, thank you so much for your time and, you know, educating us on Oathbreaker and giving your thoughts on Modern Horizons. That was awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And as a reminder, everybody, make sure you go to Magic Kids and give some money to charity. I say that as somebody who will literally get nothing from that. So I'm trying to like, you know, do whatever. And also check out oathbreakermtg.org. And if anybody out there likes writing content and gets into this and wants to do some deck techs and stuff, hit me up because we always like adding more stuff like that.
Excellent. Tark, Brian, it's been awesome. We are going to cut it there. Insiders, thanks for joining us. Terrific cast. I mean, honestly, that it's been great. Amidst like this craziness that's been going on.
Yeah.
I'm sure more to come.
Modern Horizon singles. It's going to be fire. That's where I would be looking. So
I agree. I agree. Folks, everyone, thanks for joining. We will see you next time. Brian, Tark, take care.
Ciao.
Thanks.